I'm Christopher Lloyd, and this is The Connection. The AOL-Time Warner merger marks the triumph of new media over old. It also shows how much the new media need the old media. AOL needs Time Warner's cable access and its trove of movie archives and news content just as much as Time Warner needs AOL to move into the digital era. The new company now controls an amazing array of movie and television production houses, record labels, the CNN news empire, and entertainment and news weekly magazines. Wall Street has embraced the deal. Analysts say the government will approve it. It could just be the beginning, too. Yahoo is interested in Disney, which owns ABC, and InfoSeek, which competes with Yahoo. And AOL Time Warner may yet be interested in NBC to give them the only thing they don't have, which is a big television network. Connection listeners, do you validate this deal? Is this the future? Do you like what you're seeing? Do you catch a glimpse here of a media big brother in the making? We're talking about the AOL Time Warner colossus this hour. Kara Swisher joins us from San Francisco. She's the Wall Street Journal reporter who covers the internet and wrote the biography, so to speak, of AOL called AOL.com. Charlene Lee, with us in our studio in Boston, is a senior analyst with Forrester Research in Cambridge, specializing in new media. Mark Crispin Miller joins us from New York, professor of media studies at NYU and director of the NYU Project on Media Ownership. Kara Swisher, we knew you were onto something in that AOL story, but we didn't know what. This is the company, after all, that people love to hate, called the cockroach of cyberspace, the indestructible little bug. How did they do it? Why did it turn out that AOL was buying Time Warner, not Time Warner buying AOL?
Well, it starts very basically on the stock valuation. Investors believed in AOL more than they did Time Warner, I guess, and they were able to be worth double the company. So I guess when you have the higher stock valuation, you tend to be doing the buying rather than being bought. I think also, I mean, there were some issues about that between the two companies, the stock valuation, because even though AOL is worth twice that from a stock market valuation, Time Warner has cash flow four times that of AOL. So they worked those things out, but really it's sort of a signal of the new media age where these companies that control the internet or have very important spots on the internet are the ones that are calling the shots.
Reintroduce us to Steve Case.
Yeah.
I mean, we read your book carefully and loved talking about it, about AOL in general, but it was one of those companies in which all the guys turned gray after a while. There's not a sort of Ross Perot or even a Bill Gates kind of heroic figure in that company that I remember. Who are they?
No, Steve Case is 41 years old. Last time I looked, that was pretty young. And Bob Pittman's quite young. Most people there are very young, a little older than most internet moguls, like Jerry Yang.
I didn't mean gray-headed. I meant just sort of their corporates. Well, I shouldn't be saying this, but because you're going to correct me, but corporate survivors more than pioneers, it seemed to me.
Oh yeah, no. It was a startup. It was not something that was born out of some big fat bowel of a media company. But I think the issue with AOL was that they've been around since 1985, and every 6 months it looked like they were going to go out of business. And I think the reason they're not out of business is because they understand how to survive in this new digital age where you have to change rather quickly. And I think companies like Time Warner and the big media companies have had trouble making that transition. It's very difficult to take your business and turn it upside down, and most people resist it, and that's the reason their business ends up losing value.
What is it that Steve Case understands here? Why has he not gone out of business every 6 months for the last 15 years?
He understands that people want to get connected to the internet, that this is an important moment in communications, probably as important as the telephone or television, and he kept going and creating a service that was easy to use. So many people didn't. I mean, everyone complains about how simple AOL is. Easy. It's too easy. And I can't imagine that it's like saying, putting a door right where people need to go in and saying, oh, that's just too easy to get into the store. We need it to make it much more difficult. And I think he just did that. He built a simple, easy-to-use service and attracted lots of people, made a brand name, and then started layering on other businesses. And this is just the next step, is to own all these brands and layer in more ways to get to AOL services.
He's the corporate hedgehog here who understands one thing in enormous depth.
Right.
Interesting.
Enormous debt. No, they don't have enough
depth. Depth.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, actually, AOL is one of the only profitable internet companies, along with Yahoo. Not a huge amount of profits, but nonetheless, compared to, say, Amazon, they're like rolling in money.
Charlene Lee, From Forrester Research, what kind of a moment is this here?
We'll really see it as a watershed event. This really marks a time when new media is no longer to be seen as an internet company. It's really finding the whole entire media landscape. In the past, we've always thought about television, radio, newspapers together. Now we think about internet and newspapers and television and radio. It's no longer going to be any sort of distinction between new media and traditional media. It's just all media now. It's really marking a whole new transition in the way we're going to think about the space.
What does it matter that the internet guys are in charge?
I think it says this is where the direction of the new century is going to go. And
what is that direction?
Well, it's the speed of change and also the way that people are going to use media. It doesn't matter whether you get it from television or newspapers or the internet. I found out about this news through the Wall Street Journal, but I got it through my email. And I still consider that I got the news from the Wall Street Journal, not necessarily though, through email. So the content is really removing itself and detaching itself from the platform that it's on. And people are going to be much more flexible in the way they actually consume information and media and entertainment in the future.
What's to judge by the number? $165 billion, biggest merger ever.
It just really shows that the size of this is just tremendous, not only just the assets, but also the potential of this. Time Warner brings so many assets in terms of the real world, traditional media, and also a lot of cable access, and in particular broadband access into the home, high-speed cable access. But America Online brings the management and the thinking and the speed at which this new media company needs to move.
Mark Crispin-Miller runs the project on media ownership. Mark Crispin-Miller, we've been over some of this ground before.
Yes.
The last time with the CBS Viacom merger, and probably before that with Cap Cities, Disney's, and ABC. What, in the end, do we care about who owns this media? What does it matter?
Well, it matters greatly, although I wouldn't want to overemphasize the particular personalities of the men in charge, or even talk too much about the different corporate cultures of AOL, Time Warner, Disney, and so on. That stuff is all very interesting, and I like Kara's book as well, by the way. But we also have to face the fact that ultimately what we're talking about is a certain kind of economic structure that is in charge, irrespective of the personalities of the people who run the show, whether it's someone who's sort of liberal like Ted Turner or someone who's kind of a hard right type like Rupert Murdoch. It is all very exciting and quite dazzling, and the speed with which we can receive information is indeed remarkable. And I agree with Charlene, too, that now we're talking not about a distinction between old and new media, but just media. I don't think that's purely technologically driven, however. Even before this happened, we have seen the collapsing together of a whole bunch of media industries that were historically disjunct. We now have the same big companies owning not only TV stations, radio stations, movie studios. They also own many, many music labels. They also own many, many book publishing houses. Now, 30 years ago, this would have seemed unimaginable, that a company that owns a movie studio or that does TV would also be a major book publisher. But that's the case now. I think there are a lot of risks involved here. And I base this, not only on my own, over-nervous character. I base this on many, many conversations with a lot of people who work in these different industries. Mm. Talk to a lot of reporters, a lot of book writers, editors, book jacket designers, musicians, actors. I've talked to a lot of people in some of the unions that represent these folks. And their trepidation, their worry, has to do less with the possibility that they're going to get screwed economically, although that is always a worry. It has to do more with their concern with their craft, that more and more they're being expected to do a kind of work that they're not proud of. And this has to do with the overriding pressure to raise the stock price, keep the shareholders happy.
Oh, I wouldn't agree.
I'm sorry, excuse me?
I wouldn't agree with that.
This is Kara Swisher.
I can't imagine thinking, I never think of the shareholders. As we know, Dow Jones stock hasn't performed very well over the last year until recently. But I don't think
that, really good reporters think about that in any way.
Well, that may be, but the fact is that I can give you phone numbers. A lot of people throughout these industries who are under tremendous pressure to turn out product that will sell, however someone's stock price may have done recently.
You have to think of the difference between entertainment.
That is a fact of life.
I mean, People Magazine is different than, you know, that's the whole point, is to be entertaining. But, I mean, really fine journals really do not think about stock. I mean,
they do. Well, as a matter of fact, they do. Let's get specific. Let's talk about Time Magazine. Time Magazine has changed tremendously since 1990. It has already been transformed by the merger of Time with Warner Brothers. I know many reporters on the staff of Time Magazine who are not happy with the direction the magazine has taken. The magazine has devoted cover stories to things like Pokemon. The magazine did a cover on the phenomenon of hurricanes right when Warner Brothers' Twister was coming out, and the cover looked exactly like the poster for the movie. There is a column by Joel Stein, which is, you know, it's amusing, but it sounds like a somewhat milder version of the kind of material that Howard Stern does. I'm not lying, Kara. The fact
is
there are reporters at Time who don't consider this kind of thing appropriate. This represents a surrender to market pressures, you know, that are now paramount over many, many industries, including the book publishing industry. We now see book publishers being expected to turn in profits annually of upwards of 14%. This is historically unprecedented. It's not that kind of a business. What I'm suggesting, and we haven't even begun to talk about journalistic conflicts of interest, Christopher, and I hope we do get to that, I'm simply making the point that we're living in a system that is overwhelmingly commercial, and there's no reason to assume that it has to be that way. The internet was, you know, not for business until 1993. It was essentially privatized at that time. There is something to be said for non-commercial media. And there has never been in this country any kind of public debate about what the internet should be for. I think we need such a debate. In the 20s, the Canadian government had a commission, a national commission called the AIR Commission. They actually went to the citizens of Canada to get a sense of what Canadians wanted from their broadcast system. Did they want it to be advertising driven, or did they want something else? And the CBC, which is a very good, respectable, decent system, came out of those consultations. I don't see what's crazy about a suggestion like that in a democracy.
Well, the internet is vast. Okay. I think there's all this stuff on the internet that's available to people. I think that's what's so powerful. You don't have to about the internet, and I don't think anyone is going to be able to control it on some level because it's an amalgam of everyone who's contributing to it.
Well,
you don't need to own a broadcast network to put something on the internet, and
that's true. But Kara, I could put up a web page, and I have done. I could also open my bedroom window and lean out and scream.
It's very different. You can only talk to your neighbors who are probably just annoyed by you if you're screaming out your window.
No, my neighbors actually like me. But the point is that you know very well that most people will notice the sites of those companies with the deepest pockets, just as someone who goes to Barnes & Noble will be struck, first of all, by the piles of books that are right near the door. Those books are there because of arrangements made between Barnes & Noble and the biggest publishers.
Yeah, but you sound like, I'm shocked that gambling is going on in this place. But at least people can, you know, MP3 is fascinating to me, the phenomenon of MP3 things on the internet. These people never had a chance before, ever. There was absolutely no chance. Now at least they can get up there. And, it's better. And, you know, to complain about that, the fact that the world, that the powerful people are powerful, I mean, it's just the way of the world, I think, since the dawn of time.
There are several strands here. I want to try to sort them out a little bit. You're talking, Mark Crispin Miller, and persuasively, it seems to me, about the, shall we say, commodification of all kinds of intellectual and artistic property, whether it's songwriting, books, news, journalism of every kind. That doesn't mean, Kara Swisher, that every reporter is a prostitute in this new world.
Yeah, but I think about the commoditization of all of society. I mean, we know more about Madonna than we do about, you know, how education is done in our schools. And I think that's a human problem, not because of the media. You know, I agree. The media's gone crazy with Pokemon and all this other stuff that they really is kind of silly, but I think it's because sometimes human beings are silly, and it's just the way our society has seemed to go with this pop culture mentality.
I want to pursue this next question, though, of whether, in fact, there is room, even after this, on the Internet for infinite new innovation. I must say, Mark, when I look at this merger, it doesn't look to me, I mean, obviously they're trying to monopolize everything in sight. It looks to me as if they're chasing a bigger and more elusive target than ever. They're not going to get it. I don't think Steve Case is going to have the influence on American life that David Sarnoff or Henry Luce or William Paley did. I think the target is moving too fast.
I agree with that. I think it may well be the case that he won't succeed. I think of more concern than, in other words, what's more worrying than that possibility, which I agree is ultimately impossible, is sort of the inverse problem, which is that we're looking at a moment at which the so-called old or traditional media are now heavily invested, indeed part of, a big new media machine. This changes, you know, the pace of the news and so on. But what's significant here is, I would say, the problem of conflict of interest. Let's say, hypothetically, okay, and I grant you that this is hypothetical and maybe even a little hyperbolic, but let's say that there emerged some very intriguing and suggestive medical evidence that prolonged computer use causes cancer. Okay, God forbid, because we all use the computer all the time.
We're all dead, okay.
Exactly. Now, how much enterprise reporting on that possibility are the journalists at CNN going to do?
Let's assume they do none. It seems to me the medical Matt Drudges out there, though, are going to be coming in the window warning you of this problem, and people are going to rise up.
Well, they may, but look, let's look at a kind of an earlier moment that is comparable, which was the emergence of significant medical evidence that smoking causes cancer. I mean, that first came out of Johns Hopkins Hospital in 1935. The medical Matt Drudge of the time was the maverick journalist George Seldes, who devoted many, many issues of his independent weekly In Fact magazine to trying to promote this evidence, and the Reader's Digest also was the only other magazine that would do so. You know, Lyle Wallace wouldn't carry cigarette ads, at least in his American editions. He was very concerned about this problem. It took decades for this story to get any kind of coverage, and we all know why, and I'm not talking about a conspiracy. I'm kind of using Kara's discourse here. It's a fact of life. This is the way people are. Whoever pays the piper calls the tune. No editor is going to be too happy about running the risk of alienating a big advertiser. Well, in this case, what we have are big owners that are involved with industries that are, you know, worth critical coverage. And we've even seen in the case of the Lowell Bergman 60 Minutes situation, and that also includes ABC and Philip Morris, that the big owners can often be involved directly with, say, the tobacco industry. This is a problem when all of the media industries converge into enormous enterprises that have a lot to hide. They're involved in many different businesses, as GE is involved in, you know, nuclear power and so on. It is a problem in a democracy when journalists, and that is, you know, I'm not talking about the Matt Drudges who have not been discovered by big-time cable shows. You know, it is a problem when a lot of information simply doesn't get to people.
Mark Christopher, I want you to take a deep breath and give Charlene and Kara Swisher are shot.
One of the issues you're talking about, though, is that you're describing the traditional landscape where the printing presses, where the broadcast stations were owned by large conglomerates. Now we're talking about a very diffuse media with the internet. One of the studies that we've shown is that a lot of the traffic goes through these very large sites, but they have a very small percentage of the total traffic on the internet. The top 100 sites have less than 40% of the traffic. And the fact of the matter is, when you see a project like the Blair Witch Project, the movie, succeed with very little marketing dollars, you would say an independent film like that couldn't succeed in today's environment with media moguls out there. And yet it did. And it was primarily through word of mouth, and that is part of the strength of the internet. So if a new finding does come out, and if there is a conspiracy theory with these large corporations to try to suppress any information that may be hurting their stocks, that information will definitely get out, especially with the number of whistleblowers that are out there today. The internet is just anybody's printing press.
Kara Swisher.
Especially because of the nature of the internet. I mean, there's 50 miles from me, there's probably at least 150 kids in closets thinking about how they're going to be the next Steve Case, and they have more possibility to do so. Things can be upended in a second here in Silicon Valley. Netscape on top. Oh, no, it's on the bottom. You know, InfoSeek backed by Disney. Too bad. There's others that are better that were startups. I mean, the nature of the internet is the ability to disperse information worldwide from a single desktop. It's an incredibly powerful idea. And I think does, I mean, people do get their information from many more spots. And the more spots you get information from, the better it's going to be. And some of it's going to be profoundly idiotic. And that, you know, and again, it's the nature of humanity to like be fascinated by Brad Pitt rather than more important topics.
Kara Swisher, I wonder what you make of, you know, Mark Christenmiller's fear of monopoly and conflicts of interest, of power. And it may be a generational thing, but...
You know, I prefer that there's all these startups upending these old companies. You know, I got to say, just covering it as a reporter, I can never get through to the heads of broadcast networks. They sit in their offices in New York, go to the grill, have 23 secretaries and 49 assistants, and it takes, you have 2 minutes to talk to Mr. Big. The nature of the people who run the internet, and that may change them, you know, despite the fact they have vast wealth, it's very easy to get in touch with them. They can't hide. They try to run. I write emails to them. They respond to them. I find the group of people a lot more accessible. I just simply do as a reporter, and maybe because it's the dawn of an internet, and in 10 years, Steve Case is going to be flying around like Howard Hughes in a plane, and you'll never be able to touch him. But I don't think he can have the kind of influence that say a single Henry Luce can have, because people have more places to get information, and I welcome it.
Mark Christenmiller, I wonder, in the long run, are the geeks any less likable than the suits were?
Likeable or not doesn't really bother me. I mean, I don't care if they're personally likable or if the greatest guys in the world.
Oh, I don't like them anymore particularly. That's
which one?
Good. I'm glad to hear that because that means you'll be objective. I just want to offer some clarity here. Most Americans still get their news from a range of traditional sources. There is a sense in which people go through their day not necessarily hunkering down over the keyboard, although some people do that, but most people get their news in surprisingly more traditional ways than you would think. Let's also bear in mind that the online culture is, for the most part, I'm not saying entirely, but it's for the most part a middle to upper middle class thing. The fact is that in order for a story to get through, in order for it to make an impact, it does have to enter the usual media echo chamber. The news weeklies, New York Times, Washington Post, the network news division, CNN. That's what has to happen.
But it gets there from smaller sources.
Wait a second. Please, Kara, let me finish. Now, I was struck during the press conference that Case and Levin ran. I thought they ran it beautifully. I mean, they made very clear that they are not Mel Karmazin and Sumner Redstone. I think they've bent over backwards to make that impression. In passing, Case mentioned that he and Levin had bonded during a week they spent traveling around China. And that reminded me of the kind of troubling relationship between, for example, China and the Chinese government on the one hand, and these huge entities on the other. Michael Eisner, Rupert Murdoch, Gerald Levin, Sumner Redstone were all at the Business Forum in Shanghai a couple months ago. Redstone was indiscreet enough to say that reporting in these countries should be objective, but it should not offend the sensibilities of the host countries. These companies all understandably want access to that enormous market, and in order to get it, they will overlook a certain kind of censorship. The very week of the forum, Time Magazine's issue for that week was banned from the newsstands by the government. Rupert Murdoch obliged that government by getting rid of the BBC, whose news we heard a moment ago on this show. Murdoch got rid of the BBC, took it off of his Asian TV system because the government didn't like the way the BBC was covering them. Now, that's a problem. That strikes me as a conflict of interest. That's further indication of the fact that the news ought not, in any democracy, to be governed by any single set of interests. I don't care whether it's state or commercial interests. You know, the Matt Drudges are out there, it's true, but I think it's an exaggeration to say that one guy at his desktop can upend the whole system. That cannot happen unless there is a very receptive audience for that one guy among the rest of the media businesses.
Mark Christopher-Miller, take a deep breath. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about the AOL Time Warner merger with Kara Swisher, who covered it for the Wall Street Journal, with Charlene Lee, who analyzes it for Forrester Research in Cambridge, Massachusetts. How brave is this brave new world? How new is it? We'll be back after a short break. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. We're funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by the construction site Blocks and Building Toys for Girls and Boys Aged Infant to Infinity. Toys with connections that snap, stack, screw, and slide together at constructiontoys.com. And by CSC Consulting, helping clients achieve business results through innovative consulting and systems integration solutions. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the AOL Time Warner Connection, talking about the biggest merger of all time, $165 billion worth. Mark Christopher Miller, our guest from New York, says it's riddled with conflict of interest and monopoly, and it's going to be bad for democratic information. Kara Swisher, who covers AOL for the Wall Street Journal, is much more inclined to see it as a new stroke by new people in a much bigger world. Charlene Lee is the senior analyst with Forrester Research in Cambridge. She, too, raises the question whether there will be more voices. Will there not be more voices than fewer in the new world of the Internet? Connection listeners, what do you think? 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Mark Christopher-Miller, you got a good shot in the opening half. I think the women in this program think you don't get it. Charlene Lee?
Yeah, I think one of the things you're assuming is that this AOL Time Warner is going to be the only voice or one of the largest and loudest voices.
No, I'm not actually assuming.
Well, it's you're sort of implying that in your conversation that there's going to be fewer voices on the Internet, and there's a danger of that, but I think there is tremendous competition in the media landscape out there, and that will always keep media very honest. It's when you have a monopoly out there with one voice, for example, in a country like China, that it really becomes an issue because they control the media there.
And I just recently traveled to China and spent some time there. And I think Chinese government is reacting this way because they understand what's about to occur. There are tons of little entrepreneurs all over China all of a sudden, inspired by the Internet, who are putting up sites. Now, China is going to try its very best to be China and push these things down. And big, powerful companies that go there, from Kellogg to everyone else, is going to try to toe the line. But that is not going to stop the ability to publish to the world. The fax machine was critical. All these mediums bring the Internet
to the world and bring the world to people. And
right.
Tara Swisher, let me ask you, why do consumers in general seem to dread these mergers?
Oh, because it is. Bigger is frightening, you know? I mean, but I'm just saying you don't have to get your news from CNN. You just don't have to. There's lots and lots of places. Now, the other side of the coin that everyone always complains about is that there's too many voices and who's important, who's not. Don't we need trusted media? I like when there's lots of noise. That's my favorite part. I think the real issue that's more important more than this, because I think there's plenty of information out there and plenty of ability to get a variety of voices, is the privacy issue. Steve Case will know how much more than say the editors of the Wall Street Journal. We have put ads on pages, but we don't know who looks at them or how, you know, that they touch them or if it affects them. Steve Case will know if you watch CNN and how much you watch, possibly how much you watch if you watch it over your computer, what you're clicking on, what you're looking at, what your behavior is when you do it. You know, presumably if you buy stuff through Webvan on AOL, he may have an idea of what you buy. You know, I mean, that is the ability to track people, and not just Steve Case, you know, Yahoo can do this too. The specificity on the internet is, I think, most disturbing, because they can start marketing to you so directly and so specifically that information, having all that information is very powerful. They already have too much of it, and that's the one thing I'm concerned about.
Connection listeners, what do we make of the biggest media company that ever was and the biggest merger of all time between America Online, classic geek company of the new media, and Time Warner, child of Henry Luce and a bunch of ambitious Yale guys in the 1920s. What's it come to? 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK is our phone. Sam is on the line.
Hi.
Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. I totally agree with Mark. And, all the conversation about mix of information, to me, that totally misses the point. This is not about mix of information and availability. It's about uniting content with the pipes. I want to remind people, these are two old companies. I mean, Ms. Switzer and the other analysts want to have it both ways. The freedom and vitality of the old internet assumed onto two old players who are intimidated by that very energy and are combining to potentially stifle it. Steve Chase only joined the internet after the web proved that he couldn't have a private garden on AOL, and he had to open it up to the internet. He had to. Time is losing content share, and so now you've got Time and cable.
Yeah.
Net, let me just finish, please, quickly. Steve Chase and his subscriber base wanting to offer information and content down the pipes that Chase controls. At that point, there's no open airwaves. There's not 500 channels. They control both. And let me just finish with one quick thing. I'll get off and listen. In 1920, about 100 years ago, the new media of the last century, cinema, had the same thing happen. Movie studios stuffed content down the exhibitors' throats through these things called booking. I forget the term for it. But they basically said, if you want a top hit, you've got to show everything that we have. And basically, exhibitors became serfs to the studios. Every theater was basically a laundry studio and had to show everything they had. And it was only broken up by the government and by Chaplin and Mary Pickford and a bunch of individual artists who said, this has got to stop and form United Artists. And that's what I'm afraid of here. Content plus pipes. It is not about diversity of content.
But one thing is that Steve Case has been really pushing for open access through those exact same pipes that he now owns. And he's absolutely committed to making sure that other content is available, primarily because Time Warner only owns about 20% of the pipes in the country. They don't own a majority. And so Steve Case has a very strong interest in making sure that Time Warner content is available through the other 80% of the pipes. And the other thing that you mentioned is very true, I believe, in that I put a lot of faith in market dynamics, in that if the market says, look, this is not serving consumers well, whether it be government, individuals, other companies, competition, they will step in and make the market change. For example, you just said a very good example. AOL was proprietary, tried to keep it that way. Market said, no, this is not going to succeed. And Steve Case said, okay, we're going to have to change with the market. Again, I do put a lot of faith in industry controlling itself.
Why should we allow giants to afford the market every step of the way to have the playing field to themselves? Why shouldn't we say no?
Yeah, let me step in here. Let's be very clear about what's
going on. Mark Christian Miller, go ahead.
We're talking about AOL Time Warner expanding its consumer base. That's what this is all about. It may be true, as Charlene says, and as Steve Case insists, that they want open access. Well, that sounds terrific. First of all, there's no reason why we should have to rely on the good graces of a few CEOs to get that kind of access. But more importantly, access to what? You know, if AOL makes all this product available, what that means is that they are trying to broaden the stream of advertising for Time Warner product to as many people as possible. This is all about getting all of us exposed as much as possible in our own homes to as much Time Warner product as possible. I mean, this is not a charitable enterprise. They're not motivated by civic spirit. They're trying to sell. You know, when I say God bless them, that's what they're supposed to be doing. But the fact is, we can't then turn around and claim at the same time that they're doing everybody a public service. You know, if people are concerned about the size of these organizations, I think we should give their concerns some credit and not dismiss them as superstitious, fearful, you know, not knowing what's good for them. But, you know, the fact is that there is simply more to the culture, and it used to be available through the internet and visible to all. There's more to the culture than you know, what Warner Brothers Pictures makes, and it isn't just Time Warner, as Charlene suggests. It's a kind of trust of five or six huge players, which are indeed Time Warner's competitors, but as Gerald Levin made abundantly clear yesterday, they are also Time Warner's partners. They're not going to do anything that hurts each other's interests too much.
Kara Swisher, I wonder, I mean, where's your trust here? Is it in the market? Is it in
I trust, you know, I trust that people are smart. I don't assume that
which
people are
going
to shove Bugs Bunny down someone's throat and they have to take it. I mean, of course, marketing does, like, pound at you day after day after day. But one of the things I'm encouraged about the Internet before, what NBC wanted to put on was what NBC would have wanted to put on, and that's that. Now, you know, he can shove as much crap down our throats as possible. There is an ability to have one click to change it, and that's why these people are so desperate. That's why Time Warner got sold. I mean, my God, I'm so thrilled that they basically upended a major media company. And no matter how you slice it, they got bought. And they did it because of a little bit of desperation. And the nature of the Internet is, you know, and I know there's lots of people, oh, the old Internet, the way when we had it. Frankly, that was a bunch of exclusive techies who just don't like the fact that regular people can get on the Internet. And then there was a large hue and cry. You know, I'm glad lots of people get on the Internet. I think people are great, and they're smart, and they can get it, and they do get inundated, but people are able to resist it. And I don't think we should treat people like children.
Well, see, I agree, and that's why I think that there should be some actual public discussion.
Oh,
let's engage the public right here now, 1-800-423-8255, the America Online Time Warner Connection, 1-800-423-TALK, with Mark Crispin Miller, with Kara Swisher of the Wall Street Journal, and Charlene Lee of Forrester Research. Bronze is on the line.
Well, once again, I just want people to be aware that they're creating a large net to capture consumers in with a bunch of old content bait, okay? It's a wonderful concept. I don't think this is going to keep other companies from exploding and being powerful in the Internet or in media again. But again, what it's going to do is deny the intellectual concepts that make America so wonderful and so diverse, many of those opinions which are counter to the core of America, the sort of 20% of people who viewed the 1950s as an idealized concept, those people are going to maintain their safety position, and they're going to be presented with content. So those people will not be surfing the web, they'll be surfing AOL Time Warner. And that is potentially very dangerous to our political system and our American system of democracy, because there is not necessarily going to be the same kind of freedom of ideas.
Why not? Because those people were only reading Time magazine, and their more intellectually challenged people tried to reach out and find different things and had less choice. Now there's more choice. I hate this idea.
I don't think that there's
the
more
Internet
choice.
Elite.
Let me try this for you. It's not necessarily more choice. It's more opportunities for the one choice. You'll have the same. There's no new media being created by this. There's the same media being dispersed. Everything that Time Warner will now have, or AOL Time Warner now has, you were already able to access through the millions of Time Warner outlets and platforms anyway.
Right, they have better marketing ability. They have better, this is a marketing deal, very simply. But I think that this whole idea among internet elite that people are dumb clucks drives me nuts. I remember when AOL put out email, there was all this hue and cry among the internet elite. Oh my God, grandmothers are sending email. Well, good for them. You know what I mean?
Kara, what does that have to do with the discussion here?
Internet elite is a game that people play to turn off the consumer to the people who really are looking out for them.
But
it's not about
I put a lot of trust in the...
I know, you keep saying you put a lot of trust in the people. We're hearing from the people now.
The fact is that
a lot of people in this country, and not just a bunch of pinheads and academics and elitists and snobs, which is what you keep implying, a lot of people, a lot of labor unions, even some politicians, a lot of people are concerned about this, and it isn't because they're elitists. It's on the contrary. I mean, this whole discourse of that was then and this is now, and since it's now, it's better. Then was no golden age. Well, of course it was no golden age. But Bronze's point is that, you know, what we saw back in the 50s with this over-reliance on conservative publications like Time hasn't finally really changed that much. In other words, that it's just as difficult for a contradictory or even subversive point of view to break through, you know, and it isn't fair. It isn't fair to accuse critics of being elitist.
That's
the game that Rupert Murdoch plays.
Your material gets out there a lot.
Sarah's turn.
You have a website. The Nation is online. I read The Nation online. I never read it before because it was kind of a pain to get it. I just think you have an ability to reach out more in ways that you never had, and you can reach more and more people.
Let's hear from more and more people. 1-800-423-8255 makes the AOL Time Warner connection. Scott is calling from the road. Welcome, Scott.
Hello, Christopher. Thanks for letting me on the air.
Pleasure.
I'm calling mainly because I'm really disappointed about this merger between AOL and Warner. Already Warner dictates what our fashions say through their various ways of publicizing their material. And this is only going to add to the problem.
They don't dictate anything to me. I mean, are you wearing a Time Warner suit?
No, but what they promote as their products, and what Brad Pitt's wearing, and what Madonna's saying, and this, it's been dictating what our society is going towards and the direction that we're moving. As far, it's kind of glorifying the entertainment business and the media. The media really controls what we're doing. It's a little disturbing, and we really need to have that diversity there. Perhaps with this new merger between AOL and Time Warner, they can create a diverse forum like The Connection that people will actually be able to use, and people will actually be able to communicate through, and our entertainment will be dictated by us as a majority.
Scott, thank you. I mean, we're going to stay right here on The Connection. Thank you. But I just want to, I mean, that is another voice of the people.
Christopher, can I just say one thing to that?
Say it fast.
I'll say it fast. I don't think the problem is that these corporations can ram things down our throats or dictate to us. I think the problem, rather, is that the whole spectrum gets taken up with this kind of stuff, which is usually trivial and has everything to do with how all the news operations, all three 24-hour cable operations, were all about Monica all the time. They were all about Princess Di's death all the time. They were all about John F. Kennedy Jr.'s death all the time. That's not diversity. That represents the spread of the entertainment ethic, if you want to call it that, to the exclusion of every other kind of journalism.
1-800-423-8255 makes the connection. Nick is on the line.
Ah, good morning.
Hello,
how
Nick.
Are you, Chris?
Good.
A few points. One, as for the little guy getting heard on the internet, it's awfully hard unless the search services get a lot better than they are right now. Most search services either say there's nothing there or you have your choice of 1,000 possibilities. Two, like everything else, those websites that get advertised get looked at more.
Right.
And finally, about America Online, I've never used it, not understanding why you'd want to. But I do remember several horrible consumer disasters in terms of how they treat customers. Are we going to have more of this now that they take over Time Warner?
Tara, that's for you. Is AOL going to be a better service now?
The entire technology industry has been handing us substandard products since the beginning. I mean, the kind of crap that you put up with your computer is incredible, especially the amount of money you pay for it. And AOL has been no different than the rest of them. And in fact, has had a much more a rocky record of not being able to access the company's databases very easily. They seem to have cleared that up. That hasn't happened. I think the latest victim is eBay, which has had a lot of technological snafus. I think that's an issue. Consumers, I really still don't understand why we put up with so much from technology companies.
Will it get better?
It'll never works either. I mean, and we pay a lot of money for it. I don't know. They should make it work. If you're paying for something, it should work.
1-800-423-8255. Joe is on the line.
Hi, you talking to me?
Yes, please, Joe.
Hi, I have a little bit of information to share. I'm a musician who's done maybe 12 to 15 CDs. Most of my catalog now belongs to AOL, and I would like to emit a yelp of pain. I began recording for a small independent company where the artistic director knew his artists personally, went to their concerts. Then there was one merger, and there was an increasing distance from the suits. Now there's a second and a third merger, and with every time this happens, the people you talk with get stupider, more cautious, and less connected with the world of art.
You should have asked to be paid in stock options, Joe.
Well, this is my problem. I mean, now I'm owned by AOL, and I'm registering a protest. I think this is wonderful that you can put your stuff on the net for free, but for a working artist, I do classical music, which is off the map completely in terms of the entertainment world, but which used to have some sort of presence in the media. I need $20,000 to $40,000 to produce my ensemble on a CD. I used to be able to talk to execs who knew what I was doing and who understood why I was there. And that possibility, that window gets smaller almost every 6 months.
Yeah,
it's a catastrophic situation.
That man is not an elitist. But I want to point out,
I don't think he's an elitist. I don't think he does. It just this is a problem with all of society. This problem of dumbing down.
Well, here's a very this is the here and now issue. I must say I agree with the pessimistic callers in, because some of the arts aren't immediately profitable, and if everybody's driven by a quarterly statement, what's going to happen to us?
Yeah.
Charlene Lee, you had an alternative for Joe.
Yeah, one of the things I know you can. The idea of the internet is that you put the music for free, but it's also allowing independent artists like yourself to bypass the suits in the studios.
But I need capital, ma'am. I mean, that's my problem.
Yeah.
A working artist needs a patron. They used to be princes, and then they were record company execs. But the record company execs aren't the same people anymore.
Right.
They don't know the music anymore. They know quarterly statements. And that's changing, and that's not good for the arts in America.
Let me just add something about dumbing
Mark
down.
Mark Christian Miller.
There is, in fact, an audience for classical music.
Of course, there is.
There's also an audience for foreign film. We're not talking about whether these things are profitable. We're talking about whether they're profitable enough. In Philadelphia, for example, the city's only classical music station changed formats to soft rock a few years ago. It was only making $5 million a year.
But that wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough.
Yeah,
this is pathological. This means that a city with a large audience of serious concertgoers didn't any longer have a classical music station, and that's not democratic, and it's not culturally viable.
It's not democratic, but it's also there were probably a lot of stories behind that particular station was probably maybe have been mismanaged, the advertising base,
but
the subscribers. I think you're simplifying the situation.
No, we're not simplifying it. This is the reality, and we have to look at it. When I was starting in the classical music business, the company I worked for, I recorded for, had a dozen reps for classical music all over the country. This is an enormous multimedia. This is Time Warner. And now they have one guy in an office in New York and one part-time assistant. They've just basically decided not to do it. So what happens to the music I make? It's competing it's competing with other classical artists, but that's almost a detail. I'm competing with flamenco singers and tango records.
Celine
Dion. And the Charge to Be Rich videos and stuff like that. And, of course, the sales reps have to make a certain nut every month. They've got to bring in a certain amount of money. Why are they going to waste time on some dinky little piece from, from the 18th century or the 12th century when they can sell a video of How to Be Rich?
That's a very good question, Charlene. I mean, how do music lovers, to take one important little market of interesting people, fight back?
I think one of the things to realize, I think, is that, again, the Internet I can't help you with the fact that you need so much to produce a CD, but do you need to produce a CD anymore? You can put it up in an MP3 file that's a lot cheaper, and you don't have to press the CDs, and also the market is much more niche and focused to what you want. I think the reality of the marketplace is that there aren't as many people who want to hear your music or to hear classical music and to support it. And public radio is the same way.
I want to give Kara Swisher a last word. We heard nothing but skeptics out there from the calls today, Kara.
Well, I'm not that, you know. Well, I mean, they should be skeptical. I'm concerned about privacy. You know, I think that people go where listen and watch what they want to watch. They get marketed to and they can make choices and they have more choices with the Internet. But the thing that I think is hidden behind all is this privacy issue, and that's what's really scary.
We're going to stay on the case, Kara Swisher, with your help. Thank you enormously for joining us. Thank you, Mark Crispin Miller. Thank you, Charlene Lee. I'm Christopher Ladin. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. We're funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by Magic Hour Communications, helping Fortune 1000 and fast-growing companies sell, market, and educate through videos, multimedia, websites, and presentations. Magic-Hour.com. And by PCs for Everyone, Windows 98, NT, and Linux-based computer systems and parts, building home PCs, corporate workstations, and servers. PCsforEveryone.com. PRI, Public Radio International. From